Australia is a very important country. It's the outpost of the West in that region, and what it's not a big actor in the world, but in that part of the world it is, and what happens here very much affects what happens there, and that'll affect what happens in Indonesia as well. Britain is another case. And there's plenty going on there. I mean, that's where most of our information is coming from, through Australia. Well, that's one major issue right now, the termination of arms. Another one also has to do with Australia, and that has to do with the World Court. The World Court is now, just has heard, last the end of January, an extremely important case. It's one of the most important cases in contemporary international law. I haven't seen a word about it here. It's being very widely reported in Australia and Portugal and Europe and so on. Maybe there's something here. I haven't seen it yet. The case has to do with Portugal, as the former, is still recognized by the United Nations as the responsible administrative authority. It brought a charge against Australia, not Indonesia, because Indonesia refuses to submit to the court, but it brought a charge against Australia for a treaty that was signed between Australia and Indonesia to rob Timor's oil. This is the sea between Australia and Timor is called the Timor Gap, and it's been long known that it's a very rich, it's a potentially quite rich oil-producing area. A main reason for Western support for the Indonesian invasion was to get their hands on the oil. We know that from the leaked cables. The Australian ambassador to Jakarta, Indonesia, back in August 1975, sent a cable to Canberra, the capital, saying that, you know, we have to let the Indonesians take over. This is a couple of months before anyone, while people were claiming they didn't know that there was an invasion coming. Of course, it was coming. Everybody knew it. I said, we have to let the Indonesians take over. And the main reason, he said, is that it will be easier to make a deal for the oil in the Timor Gap with Indonesia than it would be with Portugal or with an independent East Timor. Okay, and everybody knows that the interests of the oil companies are the national interest. That's another truism. So therefore, better to let the Indonesians take over. Well, the actual exploitation of the oil has waited a while. It was kind of just too turbulent. But in 1989, Australia and Indonesia did sign a treaty dividing up the oil off the coast of Timor between the two of them. The treaty refers to the Indonesian province of East Timor. There isn't a word in the treaty about any set-aside for the people of East Timor, like 5 cents somewhere. No, just Australia and Indonesia. This is the only international instrument, the only international treaty that officially recognizes the takeover of East Timor by Indonesia. Others do recognize it, but not officially. In fact, Australia had already given de jure recognition, only Western country to do so. The timing was very appropriate. It was signed by the foreign ministers in 1989, ratified by the parliament in 1990, at just about the time when Iraq invaded Kuwait. And in fact, the analog is extremely close. It's as if Libya, say, had made a treaty with Iraq to exploit Kuwait's oil during the period of the Iraqi occupation of Kuwait. If that had happened, you would have heard about it. In fact, you would have heard the nuclear bombs dropping on Tripoli. But this time it was the West who was doing it, so you didn't hear about it. Well, it took again a little while for concessions to be handed out and so on. And in fact, the timing for that was pretty nice too. Right after the Dili massacre, while the West was engaged in a show of outrage, ritual outrage, right at that point the oil companies began prospecting. So about 6 or 8 weeks after the massacre, big oil companies started prospecting in the region, including American oil companies. So Phillips Petroleum, for example, is one of those big Oklahoma-based oil company carrying out exploration, and there have recently been apparently pretty big finds in the Timor Gap. Well, the treaty that Portugal has brought to the world, the case that Portugal's brought to the World Court, charges that the treaty is illegal. And it's a very important case. The hearing has been done. The judgment will come down later. The international law aspects of it are quite straight. I don't think anybody debates them much. The case is based on the central principles of international law. On the 25th anniversary of the United Nations, founding of the United Nations, there was a treaty signed, an international treaty. Everybody signed it, 100%. It's called the Friendly Relations Treaty. It's a treaty on cooperation among friendly nations, meaning everybody pretends to be. And it states explicitly, it rules out explicitly any acquisition of territory by force. A treaty that followed up right away, again unanimous, UN resolution, the Treaty on Aggression, adds that no special advantage can be gained by anyone from the acquisition of territory by force. When the Security Council condemned the Indonesian invasion, actually about a year after that, they were simply applying the terms of those two major resolutions to the special case of Indonesia. There's no question about the status of the resolutions. The World Court, in fact, specifically recognized them, authorized them as the highest international judicial body, as customary international law, as the central customary international law, as just the spelling out of the meaning of the United Nations Charter, which is the fundamental framework of international law. There's no doubt about Australia's commitment to this. In fact, Australia initiated the proceedings and was very outspoken about the importance of this. Indonesia also ratified it, in fact, with strong statements, as did the United States. That's basically the legal side of the matter. If the World Court ever reaches the substance of the issue, I don't think there's much doubt about how it'll be decided. However, there are a lot of pressures on the World Court not to try to evade it somehow, as you can imagine. The big countries, the United States, Britain, others, are pressing the World Court very hard to avoid the issue. And if any of you are lawyers, you know that part of your training is to be able to prove that 2 and 2 is 6 anytime that your client tells you to. So there's all kind of ways in which you can show, just like, you know, the congressional legislation means the opposite of what it says, you can show that international law means the opposite of what it says, or you can find some procedural issue to avoid it, and it's possible the World Court may do that. These are not legal decisions. These are political decisions. They have to do with pressures and power. If there's enough focus on the World Court, primarily here, the one country in the world that really matters, then the World Court will find it much easier to reach a decision on the substance. And that's important, not only for this case, but because of the implications elsewhere. Incidentally, I should say that, again, Australia is not the United States. If the court case goes against Australia, they'll probably abide by it, unlike the United States, which just laughs at the World Court. The World Court decision, which identified the Friendly Relations Treaty as the core of international law, was the 1986 decision condemning U.S. aggression against Nicaragua, which, of course, the United States just laughed at. In fact, it was condemned all over the press and by, you know, educated people and so on as discrediting the United Nations. Take a look at the coverage. Discredited the United Nations because they dared to condemn the United States for what they called unlawful use of force in its attack against Nicaragua and the illegal economic warfare. Congress reacted to the World Court decision by that sharply increasing military aid to the Contras, including the Liberal Democrats, I should say. But Australia isn't the United States. It's not a dedicated criminal state like we are. And there's also a popular, you know, there's enough popular feeling in Australia that they probably couldn't get away with it. Here they could get away with it to the applause of everyone, liberals, you know, mainstream, everyone else. That's our problem, you know, not the world's problem, but because it's our problem. So if the decision goes against Australia, they'll probably abide by it, and that will make a big difference. So that's another issue. I think this thing should be made very public as much as possible. Just on the side, there's another major issue coming to the World Court right now, which has also not been reported here, but ought to be. It's connected with nuclear weapons. There's a lot of discussion in the press now about the Non-Proliferation Treaty, We're all reading about that, and how we got to make sure that those rogue states sign the Non-Proliferation Treaty for another 25 years. The Non-Proliferation Treaty has two, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty has two aspects. One is that countries that don't have nuclear arms are committed, those the signers, not to develop them. Of course, with the usual exceptions. If it happens to be a U.S. client state, they can do anything they feel like. But states other than U.S. client states who are exempt from any provisions, they are not supposed to develop nuclear weapons. But there's another side to it, which is less discussed, and that is that the states that have nuclear weapons are committed to eliminating them. Okay, that's the other half. That's why other states that don't have them sign the treaty. Well, the first half of the treaty, the United States pays no attention to. The Clinton administration recently announced that it was going to at least make a statement about ending. In fact, Clinton announced a speech in which he said, this White House announced a speech, which he was going to say something about moving towards the elimination of nuclear weapons. But when he actually gave the speech, that phrase was taken out, and he just said something general about disarmament. Well, there is a world court case coming that's relevant to that. They're hearing it now. The World Health Organization, there's an Indonesia connection on this, incidentally. The World Health Organization, over the vociferous opposition of the United States, Britain, and France, agreed to request the World Court for an advisory hearing on the legality of possession use, but that means also possession of nuclear weapons. The U.S. was bitterly opposed, as was Britain, but the World Health Organization did agree. And that is coming before the World Court. They're under, again, a lot of pressure not to give an advisory commission an opinion, or else to give the one that the U.S. wants. The Indonesia connection is this. This came to the World Court at a time when Indonesia happened to be the head of the non-aligned countries. The non-aligned countries are a grouping, and there's a revolving chair, and happened that Indonesia was the chair that year. The non-aligned countries agreed to submit a resolution to the World Court supporting the World Health Organization. The United States and Britain and France threatened Indonesia with sanctions unless they withdrew that. They like massacring a third of the population of East Timor. Well, that's okay, no sanctions for that. But advancing to the United Nations, but some things really are crimes, putting before the World Court a resolution of most of the people in the world, calling on them to address the request of the World Health Organization. Well, Indonesia backed off quickly. When the big mafia don threatens sanctions, you don't kid around. So when something's important, the United States and its clients, Britain especially, they know how to act tough, and that tells us something too. It tells us something about none of this has ever been reported here as far as I'm aware. I mean, I learned about it from a church newspaper in Canada, and I then mentioned it to John Pilger, a very good British reporter, and he investigated it in England, and he was able to break the story in England. As far as I know, it's never been reported here. Or maybe a few things here and there, but never in the mainstream. Well, that's another important one. It's a particularly important right now with the Non-Proliferation Treaty coming up, but it also tells you something about how to influence Indonesia. Easy, when the United States decides to do it. Actually, while we're on ironies, if I'm not running out of time, there's another major story right now that also has an interesting Indonesia connection. It's the front page story in the Boston Globe every morning. Every morning for the last week, the big story has been about a girl who was just refused admission by Harvard, Gina Grant. When she was 14 years old, she killed an abusive mother, and then she went to juvenile court and was sentenced and so on. She was sent up north. This was in the South. Since then, she had apparently an absolutely stellar record at Cambridge Rindge in Latin, which is not the most comfortable school in the world to be in. You might take a walk through the halls sometime and you'll get a sense. But she was, her record, and she was, tutoring children in the slums and all sorts of stuff. So she got advanced admission to Harvard. But then they discovered that this thing had happened when she was 14 years old. So Harvard rescinded the admission, and the MIT admissions officer said, yeah, we wouldn't have accepted her either, because after all, character is important, and so on and so forth. Well, okay, you know, nice to know that they have such high standards. There's some other cases that it's pretty hard to miss, you know, because they're in fact in the papers right now. For example, there's a big flap about Guatemala. I've been reading all about the CIA in Guatemala. It has nothing to do with the CIA, incidentally. It's the White House in Guatemala. But they keep quoting a guy named General Gramajo, Hector Gramajo, in Guatemala. Well, Hector Gramajo was responsible for the slaughter of tens of thousands of people. He's a real mass murderer, you know, a real first-class mass murderer. Tens of thousands of people in the highlands of Guatemala, supported by us, by the Reagan administration about 10 years ago. He was the State Department favorite they wanted him to be president. So they brought him to Harvard to groom him. You know, there is where you learn manners. So he was brought to Harvard. I actually read about it in a Central American journal and mentioned it to some local Central America activists who looked into it. Harvard denied that he was there, but he was there. And this same Alan Nairn, who I mentioned before, who's not only a terrific reporter but has quite a flair for the dramatic, at the Harvard commencement, in front of television cameras and so on, ran up in front of the cameras with a subpoena from the Center for Constitutional Rights, charging Gramajo with major crimes. There happens to be an American law which makes it permissible, possible to charge a foreign person who happens to be here for crimes committed in that country, if you can find somebody here with standing. He did it. Gramajo came to trial. He fled the country, of course, after he got his degree. And he was in Boston. I think it was in Boston. And he was fined, I forget how much, $10 million or something. Well, okay, character's all right in that case. That's not like a kid killing an abusive mother when she's 14. What about the Indonesia connection? There's one here, too. The year after this Gramajo affair came the Dili massacre and the cover-up. And part of the cover-up was a decision by Indonesia to send the top generals responsible out of the country so people wouldn't notice them for a while until things settled down. One of them is a general named Sintang Panjaitan, who was the guy in charge of the whole affair. He was sent off to Boston, probably to Harvard. They deny it, and nobody's been able to figure out exactly what he's doing here, but I'll bet you if you look, he was at Harvard to get his skills refined. He was found by local activists who started protesting, and then came, I guess, my favorite story in the Boston Globe or any newspaper ever in history. It was on the anniversary of the Dili massacre headline that says, Indonesian general facing suit flees Boston. You know. He fled Boston. The suit was brought. A New Zealand woman whose son was killed in the after the Dili massacre. The Dili massacre was one massacre. Then they started killing people all over the place. Her name is Helen Todd, and that makes it easier to bring a suit in Boston, I should say, than if your name is something, one of these unpronounceable third world things. But she, Helen Todd, did bring a suit on behalf of her son, who was killed, and the Indonesian general fled Boston. He lost by default, and that was a $14 million sentence last November. That one was, in fact, all over the papers. So those kind of guys are okay, but, not bad people who do things like Gina Grant did, because we have to watch out for character. I'm being polite and not mentioning a lot of other people with connections with the universities who have a few things to answer for, but we'll drop it. Well, that's enough for ironies. There's a lot to say about background, but it's too late. So I'll just end. There's quite a lot that can be done about this. The Indonesians are nervous, you know. They have already made statements to the effect that maybe it's not worth the trouble. If the World Court decision could push things further, more protest here and in Australia and England could make a big difference, also in other countries, but these are the three main ones. It's entirely possible that even journals like the Wall Street Journal have come out editorially saying it would be wise for Indonesia to, their phrase was, get the pebble out of their shoe, The phrase comes from the Indonesian foreign minister, who said that we've got this piece of gravel in our shoe and maybe we ought to get rid of it. It's just becoming too much of an annoyance. And it's conceivable that it might happen. I think it's at a pretty, it's at an important moment. It could go either way. And with enough pressure here, we could make a big difference in the way it comes out. Thanks.